God damn you.
It is a little strange that we have such an aversion to slavery because historically there have been abuses for many people, poor people, perhaps people who weren't educated, perhaps people who had no other opportunity. Working for a gentle, caring, loving master was the best of all possible worlds.
Campus is a loaded minefield. There are girls everywhere. And it's guaranteed that I will pass some attractive girls as I walk in between classes.
If it's not requiring her to sin, but simply hurting her, then I think she endures verbal abuse for a season, and she endures perhaps being smacked one night, and then she seeks help from the church.
It would be hard for me to see how a woman could be a drill sergeant.
Right face, left face, keep your mouth shut, private.
Over men without violating their sense of manhood and her sense of womanhood.
Go home.
They want power, not equality. This is the highest location they can ascend to that power in the evangelical church.
We are meaning makers and storytellers. And the stories we tell ourselves are the stories that shape our lives.
We need each other badly or goodly. We need each other. And we keep forgetting again and again and again that we are loved. And we say, no, I'm no good. No, I messed it all up. No, I feel so guilty. No, I feel so ashamed. We need each other. In the midst of this difficult, dark, and often violent world, we need to have a community of support to which we can call all people and be a community of hope.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Opening. This is Rick Pidcock, and the title of this episode is Relationships of Holiness or Holiness. If that it sounds confusing, look at the spelling. Holiness is H-O-L-I-N-E-S-S or Holiness, W-H-O-L-I-N-E-S-S. And I realize I made up a word. It is what it is. I think you'll understand as we get into the article and the discussion. So I just want to say from the start that it has been a bit since I had my previous episode. In fact, it's been, I think, 2 months now. I was not planning on taking this long to release this episode, but I ended up last month getting sick for, like, I don't know, 8 weeks or so. I had a cough, and I tried to record this episode, but I just could not get through it. I kept coughing. So I'm going to use the recording that I had for reading the article, but I am just doing an intro here, and then I'll do my reflections just today as I'm, you know, thinking through it a bit more fresh. And so I also wanted to say, I have another podcast. If you didn't know, it's the Infinite Mystery Podcast. You can find it on all the same platforms you find this one on. And in that one, it's one that I record on my back porch, and it's unedited, and, you know, you can get the sounds of the background and everything. Whatever happens is going to happen, and that's the way I have it. And so if you want to check that out, check it out wherever you listen to podcasts. It's a lot more of a contemplative spirituality form where we look at different poetry of mystics and then reflect on those. So, but for this episode, one reason I mentioned that is that I'm actually recording on my back porch for this episode too. So I decided it's been a lot trying to get everything together in the house with coordinating 5 kids. And so I just decided to, rather than waiting for a time for them to be able to be quiet for an episode, I decided to come out here and just record it on the back porch. So in this episode, speaking of kids, I'm going to be reading a an article that I wrote called I'm a Stay-at-Home Dad Who's Learning the Power of Relationships. And this was published by Baptist News Global on September 23rd, 2020. I'm a stay-at-home dad for 5 kids under the age of 10. One of the most common responses to my recent piece about how John MacArthur doesn't love his neighbor has been people attacking me for being a stay-at-home dad. Who am I as a stay-at-home dad to critique a seasoned pastor like MacArthur? One person even went so far as to tell me, "Go wash the dishes and make me a sandwich." I've already washed the dishes today, but a sandwich might be nice. These past 6 months of quarantine have been a beautiful and revealing time for me. As my daughter has commented a number of times, in some ways, it's kind of nice because we have each other and get to be together. So I'd like to share 5 stories of connecting with my kids during this time and then consider how holding to the theology of men like MacArthur would have affected our experiences of these moments. Affirming their goodness. It was a beautiful sunny day as we went over to my parents' house for our only pool party of the year. As you can imagine, my departure from conservative evangelicalism has caused relational stress with family. So whenever we go over there, my wounds feel fresh. During this year of COVID-19, we have only been over there twice. Each time, I'm especially present to my wounds. After the pool party was over, my mom asked my 10-year-old son, Blake, to help her throw the kids' pool into the trash. He folded it up, carried it across the yard, and lifted it into the trash can all by himself. As I observed this moment with my mom thanking him, I felt the emotions I carry both as a proud father of my son and as a child who wishes I could be affirmed for how I've parented my own kids. A simple act of my son throwing a pool away becomes a door to deep wonders and wounds. And for one small moment, it felt so good to watch my son help and receive the affirmation of my mom. At some spiritually quantum level, I could catch a glimpse of the three of us converging as relationships of energy. Connecting with their wonder. My 8-year-old son Trevor loves playing video games that allow him to create his own worlds. During quarantine, it has been easy to get stuck in the house and miss the world around us. As an introvert, he could be content to stay inside. So we've had to get creative with our time together. Often, the most creative activities can be the simplest and most accessible. We've made a habit of taking walks together. He loves listening to the birds, feeling the breeze, and resting in a lounge chair to watch the trees. During these times, he and I can connect with each other and with brother sun, sister moon, brothers wind and air, and sister water at a mystical and contemplative level of deep stillness. He may not even be aware of contemplative presence or of how the entire cosmos is energy and relationship at its core, but I can see him intuitively sensing his connection with creation. Grieving their wounds. My 6-year-old daughter Aubrey is usually a fireball, but the other day she began to cry because she felt sick. After asking her what was wrong and if there was any way I could help her, I began to realize that she didn't know and didn't want any of my solutions. She simply wanted me to grieve with her. And so we sat together. As we simply sat with her grief, our hearts began to bond and her body began to gain some strength. There was no need to point to anything beyond that moment. Sitting together in her grief was enough. Learning their language. As I was putting my 4-year-old son Killian to bed one night, he said, "Daddy, did you know I have a ghost inside of me?" "Oh, really?" I asked. "Tell me more." He went on to explain that the ghost inside of him is what makes him alive, and that it figures out where the germs are inside of him in order to make sure he's okay. It's so freeing to be able to learn your child's language to discover how they are processing who they are in the world. Being present. My 2-year-old daughter Eliana laid on her back looking up into my eyes through the dim glow of her star lamp. I stroked her hair and sang "Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star" as she gently smiled. Through her blanket, I could feel her 2 tiny feet cuddling with one another. Instantly, our bond grew even more as I recognized how she was doing with her feet the same thing that I often do with mine. Little does she know. And for those few small moments, the infinite beauty of the entire cosmos was held between the two of us. Is Christianity a religion or a relationship? Relationships converge and grow through affirming, connecting, grieving, learning, and being present. To move against that flow would be to cause a disconnect. I often hear Christians say that Christianity is not a religion, but a relationship. I'd love for that to be the case, and in theory, I think it can be. But if Christianity is a relationship, then its theology needs to resemble healthy relationships. The problem with American conservative evangelicalism, however, is that its theology in no way resembles healthy relationships. Rather than affirming our goodness, it sets our relationship with God on a merit system where God accepts us only if Jesus merits perfection and gets violently murdered in our place, and where even our goodness is worthy of eternal hell when we're not actively thinking through a framework of faith. What kind of healthy relationship operates like that? Rather than connecting with our wonder, it sets up a dualism where creation consists of separated individual entities and where we can't connect with creation too much for fear of worshiping it. Its rampant embrace of young earth creationism fosters a hostility toward modern science. This disconnect with creation and mistrust of scientists, fueled by a fatalist view of the future of the earth, has led to a dismissal of creation care that is harming our planet. What kind of healthy relationship operates like that? Rather than grieving our wounds, it instead forces us to think about our wounds within the correct framework of glorifying God and remembering that we actually deserve to be set on fire immediately forever. What kind of healthy relationship operates like that? Rather than learning our languages, it is so overcome with fear of eternal conscious torment that it demands that we make sure everyone uses its correct terminology in order to escape the wrath of God. What kind of healthy relationship operates like that? Rather than allowing us to be fully present now with each other, it forces us to have our minds set on someone else, Jesus, and in another time, either the cross or eternity. What kind of healthy relationship operates like that? Retribution and disconnection. The relationships of American conservative evangelicalism are made possible through retribution. God will enter into a relationship with you only if God chooses to grant you the merits of Jesus, where the Father got his anger all out by retributively crushing Jesus to death. But for the vast majority of us, God plans to torture us with retribution forever in hell. Again, what kind of healthy relationship operates like that? The degree to which we embrace what mainstream conservative evangelicalism says about the gospel is the degree to which we will be disconnected from ourselves and from one another. I couldn't have fully embraced those moments during quarantine with my kids of affirming, connecting, grieving, learning, and being present within the gospel framework I once held as truth. At some point, I either would have had to disconnect with that theology in order to continue converging in relationship with my kids, or I would have had to move on from my kids to some other formula, terminology, or dimension. We're seeing the fruit of evangelicalism's disconnection from self and neighbor during this season of COVID-19 and through their embrace of Donald Trump during this political season. Trump is the perfect candidate for them. He fits their theology of relationship based on merit and retribution well. In my bio, I list my status as a stay-at-home dad as my first qualification precisely because I believe that the entire universe and healthy Christianity is relationship. I'll never reach the masses with my message that men like MacArthur have reached with theirs. But I know what it's like to affirm, connect, grieve, learn, and be with my kids. So for me, in the convergence of the self and the other, I'm content to believe that God is there, converging in relationship with us too. So it's been 2 years now since writing this article, and I am still a stay-at-home dad. Imagine that. It has worked out really well for us, and wouldn't want it any other way. And I want to, reflecting back on this article, I want to start off by tapping into this idea Or the question I asked, is Christianity a religion or a relationship? And I was about to have a child interrupt there for a second. And I think that one assumption that I have is that if Christianity is a relationship, then its theology needs to resemble healthy relationships. And I do believe it's a relationship. I believe actually everything is a relationship because the entire universe is a relationship of relationships. And so for Christianity to say Christianity is a relationship, I think that's simply just a statement of fact. What we need to ask ourselves does the Christianity that I embrace, does it resemble healthy relationships? And that depends on the nature of the relationship. So relationships of hierarchy are different from relationships of convergence. Relationships of hierarchy exist, you know, one above the other. They're relationships of serving your way up the hierarchy and submitting to those higher up on the hierarchy and exercising your authority over those below you. And those are going to produce very different relationships.
Dad, I didn't see you there.
You didn't see me here?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to record something right now. I'm just on the back porch.
Daddy?
Yeah, baby?
By a back porch.
Just to give myself a little quiet while I'm trying to record.
Oh.
I'll be in a few minutes, though.
But I want to have a yummy.
You want a yummy snack?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll get you in a few minutes, okay?
Okay.
Could you close the door? Thank you. So that's what happens in the Infinite Mystery Podcast. We'll occasionally have things like that. Yeah, so relationships of convergence, on the other hand, are like, you know, people coming together in a circle dance. They're equals who come together in mutuality and love for one another from a place of security in who they are and in appreciation for the other. And you see the relationship of everything. And so, like, what I'm saying is, in this episode, is this, I'd like to explore this distinction between the holiness of God and the holiness of God. You know, the holiness of God, H-O-L-I-N-E-S-S, is an idea that, you know, God is holy, God is other, God is set apart, God is separate. And in a sense, there's a way, like in fundamentalism where I grew up, we would then apply that to us, and we'd say, therefore, we are to be set apart, we are to be separate, we are to be different. And while it makes logical sense, the net effect was that it kept us separate, and we saw everyone and everything through the lens of other, the other, who we were afraid of and saw as a threat. And yet the holiness of God, W-H-O-L-I-N-E-S-S, draws everything together. It sees wholes. It sees everything as relationships of wholes. And so the holiness of God with an H, because everything is punished, or everything is separate, everything is other, everything is, you're evaluating everything, it punishes all things. Whereas the holiness of God, with a W-H-O-L, heals all things because it's constantly drawing together. It's not pushing toward exile, it's drawing like gravity, center to center. And we don't... And my concern about the fundamentalist view of the holiness of God is that it leads to exile, because separation is exile, and exile is an illusion. It's not real. It's not based on reality. But the holiness of God, W-H-O-L, reveals what has been true the whole time, that you're home, even when you are experiencing the illusion of exile. I posted on Facebook a few months ago. I said, whether evolution or young earth creationism is true, my fundamental problem with evangelical theology is that they think an infinite God requires absolute perfection of finite beings in order to be in relationship with them, or that somebody must be violently murdered or tortured for eternity over it. How could a good, loving, just, and self-secure infinity need the finite to be perfect? It makes no sense at all. Such a God is impossible for us to image in a healthy, non-abusive way, and it dehumanizes all of us. And when I posted that, somebody had responded, and they said, if God is truly good and just, how much evil do you expect him to let slide? And you notice that assumption there, the wording of to let slide. It's assuming that this universe is a legal stage, a legal drama. And I didn't really want to get into a big argument with them, so I said none, because I, as a universalist, I don't see exile ultimately winning in the end. I see the wholeness and the drawing together is what is happening. And a lot of people assume that universalists are okay with evil getting a pass. Like, oh, Hitler just gets to go to heaven. Oh, murderers just get to go to heaven like nothing ever happened. And what I'm saying is no, that's not what I'm referring to here. When I talk about wholeness, it's not a denial of the exiles that we cause, but it is a drawing toward one another into infinity. And ultimately that heals all the exiles eventually. The idea that God expects perfection makes sense if the universe is a legal drama, but that's not what it is. The universe is spheres of wholeness drawing towards spheres of wholeness. Ilya Delio said, in the unbearable wholeness of being, to live in this love is to be committed to the whole, to live in the whole, to think the whole, to love the whole, to be turned to the whole. Evolution is whole-making in action, the rise of consciousness that realizes self-separateness is an illusion. That's what I was referring to about holiness versus holiness. A holiness of self, of separation, is an illusion. A holiness of whole-making in action that gives rise to consciousness is reality. She says, evolution is a movement toward more complex life forms in which at critical points in the evolutionary process, qualitative differences emerge. There is only one real evolution, the evolution of convergence, because it alone is positive and creative. The foundation of things is not so much a ground of being sustaining its existence from beneath as it is a power of attraction toward what lies ahead. She says, matter is not composed of basic building blocks, but rather comprises complicated webs of relations in which the observer constitutes the final link in the chain of the observational process. And so awareness is in wholeness, or holiness with a W-H-O-L, is becoming aware of those webs of relations and moving toward those depths of relationship with love. Delio says, quantum theory thus reveals a basic oneness of the universe. It shows that we cannot decompose the world into independently existing smallest units. As we penetrate into matter, nature does not show us any isolated basic building blocks, but rather appears as a complicated web of relations between the various parts of the whole. And she says, being is intrinsically relational and exists as unbroken wholeness in a system. And so what I'm doing with the opening is, and with my writing, as I reflect on my writing, is I'm identifying these hierarchies, these cosmological and theological hierarchies that we have that produce these power dynamics, and I'm I'm dismantling them in order to open myself and those who read or listen up to the relational wholeness of reality. And so why am I a universalist? It isn't because I can't stomach the idea of John Piper or John MacArthur or Kevin DeYoung being retributively punished, even though, honestly, I couldn't handle more than a few seconds of them burning. It's because, as Ilya Delio writes, being is intrinsically relational and exists as unbroken wholeness in a system. You simply can't exile parts from the whole. To make one part whole is to reveal to it what has been true everywhere the entire time. And so I'm a universalist because of the universe. Either there is no God and the universe exists as a relational web of wholeness, or there is a God and the whole universe bears God's image. And to make one thing new is to make all things new, because once you pull the thread, the fabric of the entire cosmos is connected. So speaking of illusions of separateness, two of the topics that have kept us apart have been religion and politics, as you can imagine. And so when 2020 came along and combined the two in the midst of COVID controversies, the combination was pretty lethal for even the most meaningful of relationships. And so that is what we're going to be discussing on our next episode of The Opening.
I don't think that the church has integrity to speak any good news at all until the church actually understands the reality that it is living and has crafted bad news in public policy. It has established theological foundations for oppression that have lived throughout the times and only changed shape over the generations, but has not been repented of.
Bad theology always produces diminished psychology produces dysfunctional sociology. Dysfunctional sociology always produces oppressive anthropology, and then they always produce oppressive economics and ideologies. You see, it all flows from bad theology. Your notion of God is wrong or flawed. Your notion of self and others and power is wrong.
Thank you for listening to The Opening Podcast with Rick Pidcock. The Opening is a podcast that deconstructs the power dynamics of religious hierarchies and opens us up to healthy relationship. For more information about today's episode, please check out rickpidcock.com and follow on social media at rickpidcock.